Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:21 p.m. Today is, and that's Pacific Summer Time, and today is September 17th. Well, President Trump has said that he's going to make an announcement about the 10% tariffs that he wants to put on China after the close, but so far there hasn't been a great deal of news flow on that front. But that has not stopped Wall Street and Nasdaq in particular pulling back, and the Nasdaq was down about 1.4% in here today. So let's kick off and look at that one first. Well, the Nasdaq has pulled back to the progression of higher reaction lows. There's been this very clear progression, a sequence, I think, of higher reaction lows evident since April, in fact, really since February. And as long as that remains intact, well, we can conclude that the bull market resumption is still intact. But when we take a look at the weekly chart, I think we can clearly see that there is a rather wide overextension relative to the trend mean. And if we look back historically over the course of the last decade, whenever that has occurred, it's reasonable to anticipate that there's going to be a reversion towards the mean. And the fact that the mean now corresponds with the peak that we saw back in January and in April, well, I think that suggests that we may be on the cusp of another reversionary move back towards the trend. So therefore, it's if we see an additional decline tomorrow, that will open up the potential for a reversion back to the mean. But then the big question is whether the region of the mean will continue to hold. Now, when we look at the Dow Jones, it was down less and slightly off its lows, and it continues to hold the 26,000 point level. Well, Boeing is the biggest constituent of the index, and it was in mildly negative territory in here today, but it's been largely range bound for most of this year. Well, a broadening pattern following such a spectacular rally that we saw in 2017 is not a particularly reliable continuation pattern, but so far it has continued to hold its progression of higher reaction lows and the region of the trend mean, and as long as it's doing that, I think investor complacency will probably be intact. Well, we do have the prospect that trade tariffs are going to have a deleterious effect on the US stock market and investor appetite for risk at some stage. But so far, the US has been a clear outperformer, and so has the dollar. Well, the dollar was in negative territory in here today, and it is at a rather important Rubicon against the euro. The euro has held a progression of lower rally highs since January, and certainly, there's been a loss of downside momentum and a failed downside break in August. Well, generally speaking, with the failed downside break, you can anticipate that we're going to get a sharp bounce back to the upper side of the range, and that's exactly what happened by the end of August. Now, the question is whether it is going to be able to string together enough of days, consecutive days on the upside to break the sequence of lower rally highs. And we may well find out that tomorrow. So this is, I think, a rather important point or a juncture for the euro and indeed for the dollar. The dollar has been pretty firm just about all year, and certainly the US economic expansion has been part of the reason for that, and the fact that you're getting outsized growth and a great deal of money coming back into the USA, which has helped to stoke demand for dollars. That's all been an important point in the dollar's favor. But the prospect of trade war is something that could derail additional demand for the dollar if it impacts economic growth, and there is the potential for that. So that is, I think, perhaps the most reasonable argument for why the euro could continue to rally from here. What is also particularly interesting is that the pound has now broken its downtrend against the euro. And when we look at that on a weekly basis, it is now right in the region of the trend mean. But so far, this has been a pretty impressive rally since the lows we saw in August. There is the realistic possibility that there is going to be some form of deal between the UK and the EU. Then the question that is really outstanding is whether those that support a hard Brexit within the Conservative Party would be willing to tolerate the potential for an election and the chance that they could eventually be blamed for putting Jeremy Corbyn in into the position of being Prime Minister. Whether they're willing to risk that rather than compromise on their ideals and support a vote on whatever deal is negotiated with the EU, that remains the big question. And considering that the vast majority of Conservative voters would probably prefer to make some concession on Brexit rather than put Jeremy Corbyn in 10 Downing Street, then that's probably going to be the course of action that that will eventually get followed. But any deal that's negotiated is probably going to resemble membership in all but name, and therefore there are going to be a lot of people that are going to be disaffected and feel really deeply disappointed by the outcome of what they voted for. Nonetheless, the pound tends to rally whenever the outlook for a softer Brexit improves, and that certainly seems to be the case right now. Well, when we look at I suppose the other way of thinking now is that if the UK is no longer the epicenter of risk, then where is? Well, I think the easy answer for a lot of people right now is Italy. And there is I'm posting an email in here today, which I think highlights some of the most negative sentiment that people have expressed towards the potential for a healthy outcome, or a benign outcome would probably be the better way of thinking about it, to what's going on in Italy with a populist regime. Well, what the MIB is telling us is that there is a reversion to the mean underway, that the index has now bounced and it is testing the region of the lower side of that overhead trading range, and it's unwinding the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Obviously, the big question is whether it's going to be able to sustain a move above the trend mean, and that has yet to be confirmed. When we look at, for example, Intesa Sanpaolo, which is the largest of the banks, it's got a very similar condition, and it is now testing the lower side of that overhead trading range, and it's unwound about half of the overextension relative to the trend mean. Then, of course, we have Atlantia. Well, Atlantia manages a number of the toll roads, and obviously it has been in considerable trouble since one of its roads collapsed and killed a number of people. But then the big question is, this is really a test for the appetite of the current administration for nationalization. And so far, the share has not continued to decline. In fact, it has been steadying up over the last few sessions. So obviously, this is very early days, and there is a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean. And it'll probably take a good deal of support building to really confirm that the worst is behind it. But it's a useful test case that is worth monitoring nonetheless. Quite whether it represents value is, I think, something that is probably impossible to answer at the current moment. Well, the continued weakness of the Greek banks is certainly something that is also, I think, probably of concern to investors. The fact is that what we definitely see with Greek government bonds is that the yield has been contained, so it still tends to get support from the ECB, but that is simply not the case with Italian bonds. Well, Italy is sending its budget to Frankfurt today for approval. And what the bond yield is suggesting is that it will meet approval because they are not pushing a number of the points that were made during the election campaign. Well, therefore, I think it is reasonable to conclude that the betrayal is underway, that what people voted for is not what they're going to get. Well, this is the kind of problem that Europe has, that People vote for one thing and they get something else. And that is a testament to the power of the status quo. If this were happening in countries with large young populations, then you'd have a popular revolt. But the UK and Italy in particular don't have young populations. In fact, particularly in Italy, it's got one of the smallest youth populations in Europe, and it has a very close to a negative population replacement rate. So that is a rather significant headwind to institutional change. Quite whether it's enough to simply vote for change has been demonstrated that that's simply not enough. And then there is, of course, the very real problem that Italy has got a substantial quantity of debt, and if it refuses to pay, well, that is going to create all kinds of trouble. That is probably going to be worse in the short and medium term than the fiscal rigor that has been demanded by the ECB. And that's a hard pill to swallow for voters that continue to see their standards of living deteriorate. Well, if we cast our mind beyond what is going on specifically in Italy, then I think it's also worth keeping a close eye on what's going on in Germany, because the index has bounced or at least paused in the region of this 12,000 level, but that represents the lower side of this range. And so far, it has taken, for example, it has taken 6 consecutive days on the upside, or well, 5 out of the 6 last day sessions on the upside to accomplish what it took one day to do in March, what it took 2 days to do later in the month. So there's been a distinct absence of clear upward dynamics to really confirm a return to demand dominance. And a rebound for the euro is not particularly good news for the export industries on which a significant number of the eurozone countries depend. Well, with the hurricane wreaking havoc in Hong Kong, that has had some effect on the stock market, but it is the prospect of greater trade tensions that are really weighing on the Chinese market. And the A-share index was at a new closing low in here today. But the other point is that we really do need to keep an eye on what's going on with the banking sector. And the banks have been, and it is the large banks at least, have been relatively steady over the last 10 weeks. But it really is that steadiness is contingent on the progression of higher reaction lows holding. And there's no getting around the fact that that China is at acute risk from trade tensions and the breakdown of the global logistics infrastructure that has been that has been, I think, the primary characteristic of globalization for the last 40 years. The renminbi, however, today was a little bit firmer, and I think this is a further testament to the fact that Chinese do not want to see the renminbi either become a political football in the USA, but also that they don't want to endanger or at least risk the potential for the capital flight. And that is a realistic possibility if the renminbi were to decline again in a similar fashion to what it did in June and July. Now, when we look at what's going on in Japan, well, Shinzo Abe is at a point where he is either going to get a mandate for another 3 years or not, and the Nikkei is anticipating that he probably will get an additional mandate from his party. It was today was Respect for the Elderly Day, and I think that was it's a rather good time to think perhaps about the fact that immigration is increasing in Japan and that they are importing lots of new young people, and that generally is good for economic growth, and not least when you have a labor shortage. And it is usually in the very early stages of immigration that an economy gets the most benefit, because you get hordes of young entrepreneurial and active people into the economy that don't benefit from the largesse of their parents or an ability to inherit land, and therefore they have to go out and work hard for whatever they can get. and they have to consume. They have to buy everything new. So that generally tends to both stimulate the economy, it improves the company formation, and then it also improves the consumption in the economy. Well, it's not until later that you get family formation and then you get a draw on social services, which is obviously the knock-on effects from immigration that people are tending to get antsy about now in Europe. But Japan is a very long way from that particular outcome since it's only just begun to allow immigration, and therefore this is where it really will get the most benefit. Well, the Nikkei did break up and out of its range on Friday, and it was a very emphatic rally from the region of the trend mean. The second section index has been a bit touch and go around the 7,000 level, but it did also bounce last week from this area. And as long as it's holding that 7,000 area, then I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. What I think people will be watching is the yen, with the dollar a little bit stronger in here today, excuse me, a little bit weaker. The yen was a bit firmer, and it has not sustained the move below 112. But nonetheless, it's unlikely that the yen is going to suddenly turn into being the strongest currency in the world either. Well, with some dollar weakness coming in, then we had the gold price was a little bit firmer, and it came back up towards the $1,200 area. It's going to need to string together a couple of days on the upside to break this progression of lower rally highs. And this is not this a chart pattern is not all that different from what we see with the euro. Then with the silver price, it is right around this $14 area, and it has still got this sequence of ranges one below another. So it really does need to a midpoint danger line stop is exactly the kind of environment that would really signal a change in the consistency of this trend, and it's exactly the same with platinum. So while we saw at least some interest in the precious metals in here today, that was simply not at all the case with the rest of the commodity complex, and particularly the softs. And that's because they are so much more influenced by the potential for trade tensions. So, for example, lumber has extended its decline below 400, and it was limit down. And you can see that it really only went to limit down at the end of the session. So there's definitely selling pressure coming in here. And when we look at that on a weekly basis, well, $400 could have been an area of support, and it simply hasn't been. And this is unwinding all of the big advance that we saw from the third quarter of last year, and there's no sign yet that it's over. Then, when we look at what's going on with the sugar market, it's been down in a dynamic manner now 2 consecutive days, but on a weekly basis, it had unwound the overbought, excuse me, oversold condition relative to the trend mean, and now there's an increasing possibility that it is going to go right back down and test the 10 level, and well, we'll see whether that in fact holds. Coffee prices are also back below that psychological dollar level, and again, we didn't see a particularly dynamic bounce from the 100-cent level. And now the price is back below it once more. Well, looking at this on a longer term basis, there have been occasions when coffee prices have been lower than a dollar, and there's at least 2 occasions when it's halved from here. So, in the absence of a clear upper dynamic, this does not look like a particularly bullish environment. And then cocoa prices have bounced over the course of the last few weeks, but then now the question is how much of this bounce are they going to be able to hold? It's the whole argument for support building from above 2000 is going to be based upon how well it can hold the bounce that we had in August. Then oil prices were pretty quiet in here today. Brent crude, having got up to the $80 area last week, has been pulling back over the last 3 sessions, but not in a particularly dynamic manner. Certainly nothing like the kinds of dynamics that we saw in either May or in July. And by and large, this looks like a reasonably consistent medium-term uptrend, where there was a short-term overbought condition as it got up to test that $80 area, and now it is pausing around that level. But again, this doesn't look like anything other than a pause. Well, when we think about what exactly is going on in the world, the fact of the matter is that the USA has moved from monetary policy to fiscal stimulus, and that hasn't really happened anywhere else just yet. The Japanese are still pumping on a quantitative easing basis. Europe is coming to the end of its quantitative easing, and it is, I think, the big questions are starting to be asked by the market exactly whether that was a wise move, and does it really, or do the fundamentals really justify the ECB exiting its quantitative easing program? I suspect that the answer to that is no, but it's probably going to take a little bit of time for institutional changing of minds to occur within the ECB, and that represents a risk. Then, when we think about what's going on in Latin America, the outcome of the reading not typing very effectively the outcome of the Brazilian election is still very much open, and the Bovespa has been hovering here around the 75,000 point level. Well, that is just below the trend mean. The trend mean has turned downwards, and certainly that very large pullback we saw this year has been a major trend inconsistency, and we have a lower rally high. So it's got some work to do if the consistency of the trend is going to be repaired. And that is, I think, going to be highly contingent on exactly what happens with the real. Well, the real was a little bit stronger in here today, but the dollar has held its move above four. And I think if the real can strengthen through four, well, then that will be a vote of confidence in the outcome of the Brazilian elections. Then, when we look at what's going on in Argentina, the peso got right up to t or down, I should say, to test the 40 to the dollar level, but it has at least steadied in this area. Well, inflation is running around 40%, and they have short-term interest rates of 60%, so that is still a significant carry when we think about even the effect that that has on the returns that investors might be able to glean from the market. The Merval index is back testing its progression of lower rally highs in Argentina. So there is the potential that we've seen some of the worst from the devaluation of the currency, at least in the short term. But again, it is very much open to question whether this is sustainable beyond the short term. And the lira was a little bit softer in here today as well. So when we think about the challenges that the dollar strength has had over this year, the fact is that the US still has the stronger of the big global economies. There are big questions outstanding about China and Europe, and trade tensions represent the biggest challenge that we're facing right now. But also, Wall Street has a short-term overbought condition, so there is the realistic possibility that we're now entering a period where we may see some reversion towards the mean. And the VIX index has steadied from above 10. I think it is rather interesting that we've moved back into a rather involatile period, but that it's a bit more volatile than the period before the big crash of those short VIX ETFs. And it is looking likely here that we're going to see an uptick in volatility if we do move towards a more mean reversion environment. Well, 10-year Treasury yields flirted with the 3% level today, and we're not quite able to hold it. And again, this is a short-term overbought condition on the yield, or oversold condition on the price, and there is potential here for some bounce as we're right at the upper side of the range. So I think the market is waiting with bated breath on exactly what the Trump administration is going to reveal, but the likelihood is that trade tensions are going to become more of an issue, and it could contribute to a somewhat larger pullback than we've seen in the last few months for Wall Street. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.